Amigos, nachos, amigos, and welcome to Record Breakers, a music podcast where a group of friends gather together to share music with each other, an album at a time. It's like a little book club for music. I'm Petey Rave, and I'm glad I remembered that this today's episode is not about a South Florida rock station, 94.9 Zeta, because I would have spent a little too much time talking about Paul Castronova and the Young Ron Brewer. Back in the day, and how I'm, you know, how I used to have a crush on Kimba, even though I'd never seen her face. Still love you, Kimba.
Shout out to Ann Carlini.
Yeah, shout out to all of them. That being said, I have my team, my squad, my crew, my quorum, my posse. We've got David.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Record Breakers. We occasionally talk about that evaporated wave music the kids are into these days.
Mm-hmm. We've got Matt.
Hashtag find Luke.
Mm-hmm. And we've got Brett.
If it's clear and yellow, you've got Outrun there, fella. If it's tangy and brown, you're an Outrun town.
Yes. We're here to talk about music. We're here to talk about an album, and the provider of the album this week, the presenter of the album, is David. David, you've got your best suit on, presenting uniform on.
Oh, I'm on duty, Petey.
Yes,
I'm on duty.
Yes,
and I just said
yes. But yeah, David, what have you got for us this week?
I have brought an album that I discovered through one of my favorite bands in recent years, Tesseract, and their vocalist, Daniel Tompkins. He's a multi-genre musical man, and he, in around 2017 or so, started sort of an 80s synthwave project by the name of Zeta with Paul Ortiz and Katie Jackson. We've got a guitarist, and we've got a producer with Mr. Tompkins on vocals. And I'm bringing their debut album, self-titled, Zeta.
Zeta. Yeah, I wasn't sure what to expect with this album, but I'd love to hear what y'all expected. Matt, what were your expectations coming into this album?
None really. Looking at the cover, I'm like, man, I bet there's going to be something either futuristic or something that was futuristic at one time that was deemed to be futuristic. And knowing David, I figured it would have something to do with prog metal or one or both of those individual aspects.
Prog or metal?
Prog or
metal. Yeah, prog and or metal.
Yes. Yep.
Yeah. Brett, what were your expectations coming into this album?
Not this. I thought we were going to be rocking and rolling in like with like 8 million bass drums and like, you know, some like guys in drum cages and people playing like instruments that are not electronic. But, you know, I
do often bring those things.
Yes.
And also I the name and the album cover like did not give me a whole lot to go. I'm like, yeah, that could be some like opera about, you know, flying your spaceship into a black hole and coming out in like Olympus.
Yes.
Not that exists.
I have an album that is almost exactly that.
Yeah, there's a Rush album about that exactly too. But yeah, I was not expecting it to be so electronic. Like I expected electronics, but not to be electronic.
Yeah.
And certainly not to be. I'll get into the review when I get into the meat and potatoes.
Meat and potatoes.
But yes, it is definitely a thing worth talking about.
Yes, it's a thing worth talking about. I wasn't exactly expecting this. I knew it was going. You had hinted at being more electronic based and more of a departure from the Tesseract stuff, but I wasn't sure how. And what exact way it was, but I was intrigued. But let's talk about what it is musically, what it is. David, how would you describe this album musically? What would be the themes elements you would bring out?
I'm going to try and pitch this to a couple of different audiences out there. And with pitch number one, I would say imagine if Steve Hackett had stayed with Genesis from the 70s and through the 80s. They might have eventually kind of sounded like this with a little bit more of an electronic feel, but with Steve Hackett's guitar still very much being a factor. For another audience, I would say if you like your wubs and if you like your oonces and you think that a surprise crunchy guitar solo it will really kind of trigger your brain chemicals, you might enjoy this. And for everyone else, I would say it's kind of video game modern day, where it's got some bleeps and bloops, but they're not the main focal point 100% of the time.
Mm-hmm. Matt, how would you describe this album musically? What was your reaction to it?
It was quite synthy, very 80s, because, you know, a lot of stuff these days, you know, it's stuff these days. Even if it's synthy, I don't know whether it's how much of today's influence is going to be there. And there were certain small things that made it feel modern, but mostly it really felt firmly entrenched in the 80s in a good way. Including the guitar work, when it was there, it was smooth, it was good, it was not too much, it was not too little.
Mm-hmm. Brett, how would you describe this album musically?
So remember when I brought Kavinsky's Outrun, the album from 2013, where it's not exactly that. The inspiration comes from similar places. I did find some breakdown of how they made this, but like they definitely were going for the style of, you know, 80s movie trailers, like John Carpenter films, with the where you get the like you get your Moog tone with like a 707 or an 808 drum machine, with like digital woodblock sounding echo delay like noises every now and then, and a ripping guitar solo, not unlike you were, you know, gonna have your protagonist leave one scene, drive a car through a sunset, where there's a silhouette of his, you know, his Camaro as he's driving along the beach. It's like a very, very much that, but there are also other things. It's not unlike John Carpenter uses a lot of synth, but it does not use as much harpsichord as John Carpenter did. Digital harpsichord has its place. This place was not it. There are other things that it reminded me of, because I don't necessarily have the full vocabulary of this, but there are things that sound like industrial music from the 90s on. There are parts that are obviously like the grit and the sound. There's also stuff that sounds like when the Saturn era arcade machines. The reason I keep coming back to that is that's when CD music and the synthesizers that were recording music into games started to be able to do things, and they had a bunch of Japanese soundtracks would be written by people who were like synth fusion jazz musicians. You hear them all the time on Salt Tibet. Like Battle Galarraga, like the stuff, the way that they, it's hard to describe in words, but it's swelling pitches that are bent, like for your melody. But then there's complex beat patterns underneath it that are like really like they're like dance beats, like electronic dance music. But there's a lot of buildup, and there's buildup in the same way that like modern pop music that uses it, with the buildup with the snare coming in and stuff like that. But it always has a payoff hook. And the thing that takes this from like a straight up trip, like we're gonna, you know, eat these pills and drink a lot of water and dance in Chicago, it's more of like this has an actual hook that it sets. Again, I looked up how they recorded this because I was curious after the first time, because I don't know the vocabulary all the way. The way they composed this was, I guess they one member would like write some stuff, download their MIDI file, email it to another person, they'd open it up and edit it and send it on to the next person. So it was built on top, instead of people banging their heads together, which is also, I've never even thought that somebody would write music like that, but they all but very small portions were done completely electronically. And it's also, it doesn't overstay as well. This is a 43 and a half minute album. So like it, for what it does and what it's doing, those albums you tend to think carry on because they fill it in. Like you can always add another measure of the same oomph if you were just wanting to fill dance time or you wanted to hit that hour mark, and they didn't.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's what's really cool is that it doesn't like drag on. Like
it's not Hammer Time.
No. It's not Hammer Time.
What is no, though?
Yeah. It's not
this
it's
is not
opus like Hammer Time. Yeah. Yeah, and the how it mixes how it does its approach to Outrun, synthwave, retrowave, you know, how it approaches that sound is really cool, and it feels really cool, and it does it so really musically, and I dig the when it, every once in a while it brings in the guitar, is like it just kind of almost like after and it kind of catches you off guard because it just like you forget that it was a possibility, you've forgotten that it was a possibility. But then they reintroduce it to you. It's like, hey, there could also be guitar here. It's like, what?
And it's not just regular guitar. It's like the most like reverbed and delayed out, like, you know, like sexy. It's the equivalent of a sexy saxophone break in a movie where like, but in a guitar. Like you get that long bend.
It felt like you guys were getting a little too used to heavy metal saxophone, so I thought it was time for a different strain.
Dude, yeah. They hold a note. That's a thing that is like you don't get a lot of like long-held bent notes in music these days.
Yeah.
Like listen to some Pink Floyd. You'll hold a note for a minute before you go on to the next.
Literally.
Note. Yes.
A minute. But yeah, let's talk about some of the key tracks. David, what would be some of the key tracks for you?
On the fourth track, The Distance, I am going to say that I hate and love the bridge of this song where Daniel Tompkins, who I normally love as a singer and as a vocalist and an arranger, he does a cringy rap verse where I love Daniel Tompkins, but I just want to say that was not good. But I really like the rest of the song so much that I'm willing to give it a pass. Track 6, Fires in the Snow. This would have been perfect on Far Cry 3 Blood Dragon, and I mean that in the best, most complimentary way possible. The chorus of the song was almost atonal with how multi-tracked it was, and the melody underneath it was really, really cool, and it kind of kept this warm mood, melancholy-ish, that I was digging throughout the whole album. And the ninth track, Beat the System, and big shout out to Daniel Tompkins for also being in one of the most talked about metal bands out there right now, while obviously being a massive Michael Jackson fan. If you listen to the verses and chorus of this song, you'll say, oh, this dude, he really liked Michael Jackson, and I respect the hell out of it.
Mm-hmm. Matt, what would be some of the key tracks for you?
Silent Wave, the first track. It was a really good impression, good first impression, because I started listening to this in the morning before I had fully woken up, and I'm like, this is going to be a gamble. But it just came in smooth, and it was just a nice thing to be like, this should be good. Right Time, the 6-8 just really kind of got me going, just had a great groove. I was thinking about it, and I think what it reminds me of is Tears for Fears, Everybody Wants to Rule the World.
They actually brought that up in the article, that like one of their influences was Tears for Fears. Oh. And it took me hearing that to be like, that's what it
yep.
is.
Yeah. Yep. That's it. Complete with the nice guitar solo in the middle.
Yeah.
Beat the System. Going back to the whole video game music thing, there's something enticing about this track in general, and in particular the keys have this decaying accelerating vibrato like that just when they, I guess maybe it's like an envelope filter effect or something, but when they hit it and then they let it last, and then it's just this woo.
Yeah. And like somebody's shaking a box in the back, like Frank wiggle the keyboard again, like make it make that funny noise.
And it just gets me every time. I'm like, oh, there it is again.
Oh, and it's smooth. Like you don't expect it. You don't expect it. It doesn't come in like it's not like an effect that like, yeah, it's definitely a digital thing, but I don't know what the analog equivalent would be. But yeah, it's hard to describe these
like,
things.
It's got to be some sort of envelope something, like envelope based. Yeah. But I don't know what.
Yeah.
But I want it. I want it on my pedal board.
Yes. Brett, what would be some of the key tracks for you?
The distance, this is one of the, it follows the retrowave genre pretty closely, but around the 1:40 mark, it was some straight up 90s industrial chucking. It was like a Cam FDM or a kind of Nine Inch Nails, in the tone of the grittiness of the chugging, which like you don't normally hear on this style of album. After reading that article, I had listened to this album and I was like, I need to find a way to talk about this stuff. So I started reading some articles, and that's when I read that there were influences from Tears for Fears and George Michael. And I went back and noticed Lock and Key. The guitar solo section is, you know, straight out of like you expect a cop to be driving in LA where it's way too wet to be LA, and a windshield wiper streaks and a real composition shot, like it fits. Beat the system, like the vocoder, the hook at the back end of the song, like it does get weird at the very end, but like after, you know, the second half of the song where the hook comes in is pretty solid. Like that, you know, those are the things that I pulled out here are the things that aren't your, you know, they did the Kavinsky thing where they, you know, did these, the things that stood out to me were things that were not necessary, that went against what, you hear a lot of, and like for good reason, like this genre is really, beats on that nostalgia of tone. But when they went away from it just a little bit and you had like harmonized vocals, or you had like, you know, your Tears for Fears thing where you have this like downtrodden, like little, like it's not like an overly gymnastic vocal, and then you have a guitar solo and you're like, oh, like, yeah, it is exactly Tears for Fears. Like you always forget that, you know, there's a guitar that shows up on those albums and you think it's just, what is this, like 80 schlock? Oh,
80.
Tears for Fears. They actually knew what they were doing.
Yeah. Mike Quackenbush, remember, he used to come out to a Tears for Fears song. So
yeah, break it down again. It was one of the songs that I sang, because for some reason Korean karaoke has that song. And I don't know, I don't think my brother has it in his collection, but I sang that in a karaoke booth after I finished watching The Matrix in a Korean movie theater.
I feel like Petey Karaoke Stories is
a
YouTube series waiting to happen.
Hold on, you watched The Matrix?
Yeah, there was a airing of The Matrix on, I think it's the biggest, one of the biggest screens in the world. Like it's a huge like IMAX screen, so they were doing like a special screening, like, hey, watch this classic movie on this humongous screen as like an experience. So they were doing The Matrix as just like as a visual experience. So I watched The Matrix with Korean subtitles.
Like, you know, that's great. That's fantastic.
You know what, Koreans subs no dubs.
That's right. You got to get that Keanu tone to really,
yes.
Which we're going to bring more Keanu tone sooner or later.
Sooner or later.
Oh, yeah.
That's Keanu.
Yeah. I want to shout out a couple songs. Yeah, Beat the System, as has been talked about, is a dub song, and it has a great hook, and it just has a cool, like, and like that breakdown in the middle is really nice with just like the synths and a little bit of drums and stuff like that. I give a shout out to Chemical Zone. For obvious Sega kid reasons. Yeah, I love the Chemical Zone. And then Gates of Hell. I just has like a different like alternate feel to it. Just like that coming in with that random voice. The starting a song with a voicemail shtick is not done bad here. It's done well. And it's fun, and it does fun stuff with guitars on that one.
Too many prog bands didn't learn the lesson from Dream Theater. You put it in the middle of the song.
Yes, yes.
Or we built this city.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, those are some really cool tracks. Let's bring it back around the horn, talk about some conclusive thoughts. Matt, what would be your conclusion at the end of the day?
I really enjoyed this album. I can see myself getting it in the old iTunes library. You know, it was a lot of fun. It was pretty easygoing. There were certainly some moments where, like, we don't need to hear you're trying to rap, man. It's okay. Yeah. But other than that,
keep the bars away. It's okay. Like just
yeah.
The bars are kind of weak.
Yes, Dan. That was not good.
Yeah. But other than that, like I can see myself driving to this and imagining much cooler scenarios happening than is actually happening.
Yeah. You can imagine a fake version of Miami that doesn't exist, you know.
Yeah.
You're in a red Ferrari with a blonde lady in your car, and all you're trying to do is get around those people and get your extra time, but you're never going to get it because they're going to make you put an extra quarter in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you've outran.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. When in reality, if you came down here, what you'd experience is driving down I-95 in bumper to bumper traffic. Just, you know.
I would. Yeah. I don't need to go anywhere to experience driving on an interstate with bumper to bumper traffic.
Exactly.
And I don't think either one of you live in convertible Ferrari environments.
You know who? Yeah. You know who drives convertibles in Miami? Tourists with rentals.
There's probably 14 days of the year when it's like perfect convertible weather.
Yeah, no, it's either too hot or too rainy.
Yeah, like yeah. Those are the two things. Like the sun beating down and it rains every day.
Yeah, that's Miami. Yeah. Miami summers. Yeah. You think, oh, summertime.
Petey, no, you're ruining our vaporwave dreams. Petey.
Sorry. Remember how we talked about Tokyo Love Hotel with the Rina Sawaya?
When truth becomes legend, print the legend, Petey.
Exactly. All right.
Don't Brett. Ruin the kids' vaporwave dreams.
I need to bring some music that's reminiscent of driving in West Texas for 8 hours.
But, you know,
I don't know what that would be, but
it would be
Kurt Hennig and the West Texas Rednecks. Rap is crap.
Right there. I should probably skip that episode. Yeah.
Brett, what would be your conclusion at the end of the day?
Jerry Reed is the sound of driving across Texas. No, but like a lot of people in this world, over the last few years, I've listened to my fair share of the retro wave outrun stuff. And I enjoyed it, but like I haven't found the variety in the playlists that I let play to me, or I don't have the properly sophisticated palette to notice the differences between, like, you know, like doing the Pepsi challenge for a lot of this stuff. It was like, could I recognize this out of a lineup of others of this? And honestly, there's not a lot that went full on, like there are not a lot of major well-produced things that went and did the Kavinsky thing. You can find a lot of bad people that downloaded their like the plugin to make that the outrun sound. So this isn't exactly that, but like the things that I found myself latching onto with this album are things that they did that were new that I have never, well, new to me. And, you know, like I wanted a little bit more of that new, even though I can't, like, it's unfair. Like I can't tell you what they could have done because I'd be doing it. Like, I don't know what that is or even what they could do for a genre that is very, very tightly, like, it is like, you know, that straight 80s movie and video game type, like movie trailer and action movie trailer mainly, like sound. And there's not a whole lot you can stray before you're no longer that and you're something else. And there are a few places where this was like, oh, this is, you know, a less French version of that. There, the influences are a little bit more more Anglo-European than I was actually expecting. Because, you know, like, I was not expecting Tears for Fears and George Michael to be influences on this. I was not thinking I was on that side of the pond either. But, you know, there's definitely stuff going on here that they put their mark on. But it might just be like, kind of like punk rock. I kind of had to walk away because I'm like, I'm chasing the dragon. You know, if there's more of this in the future and there's like, you've got to do this in 2017 to this make people. You've got to do something before you can do something else. And just because I've been around since 2017, not hearing this album, like I'm coming to it after all of that. So, as I unplug my headphones accidentally with my crotch. You know, it's the only
way to do it.
I mean, yeah. I don't know how I did that, but
I'm the one that just got hit with the melatonin. What the heck?
Yes.
Hey, you know what? This album ain't bad. I'm not mad at it, but like, you know, it is a little bit on brand. It follows the formula of the genre very close. And if you're into that, you'll be into this. Like, there are cool things that go on in this album. Yeah. But if you're chasing the dragon.
I figured it out. It's Philip Glass that feels like driving through West Texas because it's the same with tiny variations, and you're just waiting for it to be over.
Slightly flat.
Come at me, Philip Glass.
Sick beef going on right here. Luke's gonna show up next and like start talking real shit. Yeah. Once we find him.
Hashtag find Luke.
Yes. Hashtag find Luke. This album is one of those in a way, but I think it adds a nice little bit of variety to it. It's the old phrase that I still love from that one discography suite. If anybody remembers the discography Twitter account, I think I've said it before on the show, that you don't have to reinvent the wheels to make a good set of tires, which I always like that phrase. It just kind of seems fitting. I'm wondering if they got it from somewhere else. If they got it from somewhere else, I would love to know. But it's a nice phrase because this does contribute to a genre that's been out there and has been contributed to by a fair amount of artists that are trying to occupy all the same Spotify playlists so they can get their hits. But I think it does it really well, and it does it with nice twists and nice turns within there and nice little additives that make it worthwhile and make it a worthwhile experience. And it's really fun to kind of like just chill to it, and it kind of flies by a bit. You know, kind of you have to go back a little bit with intent to like pick out and remember exactly all those moments that you picked out and caught your attention, but there are really cool moments that do grab your attention and kind of like stick out and I think are for the better. But yeah, last but not least, David, what would be your conclusion at the end of the day?
I liked that I could hear different musical sensibilities being stirred together to make this stew of an album. You'll hear the Tears for Fears. You'll hear the electronic music. You'll hear Daniel Tompkins' sensibilities as a pop vocalist, and all kind of mixing and melding together with a really fun, almost daring sprinkling on top of just enough of a crunchy guitar to make you feel like you're really catching something that doesn't come along very often. And I felt like generally just doing just enough to be different, I think they pretty much nailed it. And I really enjoyed the whole thing. And I would say that you probably could say in certain parts of the city of Detroit, near the Detroit River in Oakland County, northern Oakland County, you could definitely drive to this in the evening in your convertible.
Mm-hmm. It should work out well, just not in the winter. Yeah.
No. Oh, no.
You just don't leave the house in the winter.
No.
Yeah, those are our thoughts on Zeta and the album Zeta. Now we get to the main event of the evening. We get to our haiku reviews, the moment we've all been waiting for, where we sum it all up in poetic form. Let's get down to the nitty-gritty. Haikumero numero uno. Matt, what is your haiku?
Groovy synthy waves with good effects and guitar. We'll listen again.
Mm-hmm. Brett, what is your haiku?
Well made and produced. It does what it's doing well. Left me wanting.
Mm-hmm. My haiku. Pretty cool mix of synthwave, metal, and others. Danny, keep flexing. And last but not least, David, what is your haiku?
The kids say a mood. Dark synthwave, metal sprinkles. I really dug it.
Mm-hmm. Those are our thoughts on Zeta's Zeta. And you can, of course, find it on our Spotify playlist. Play Record Breakers, the home game. Do your due diligence and your due diligence. You can find it. Find the Spotify playlist link on the show notes on the website. Go to recordbreakerspodcast.com. Or in your show notes on your podcasting app, if they take the episode note, they will have the links right in there, including who makes the music for the show. Hint, one of them is on the show. He makes the closing music. So you'll find links and stuff like that. Go find the links on the show notes, but including the playlist, which is going to be on there. On that Spotify playlist will be next week's record. And it's going to be provided by Brett. Brett, what have you got for us next week?
I've got I'm stuck in 1994. Everybody, I'm bringing an album that I think will be new to somebody on this podcast, and that will be the Blues Traveler album 4.
Mm-hmm.
It's the one what has the cat with sunglasses.
Yeah.
Mm.
Gotta love a cool cat.
I mean, and cat. The way that. People drew what a cool cat would look like in 1994 for an album.
Yes, exactly.
It was not MC Scat Cat.
No, it was not.
Nobody can be MC Scat Cat.
This one attracts me a little bit more than an opposite.
Yeah. But yeah, that will be next week. But this is this week. And you can, of course, find us all over the internet. David is at Call Me DJM. Matt is at Emridic W. Brett is at Hibbity Bibbert, HIBBI2IBIBBRD. I'm at PD Rave. The show's at 4 Record Breakers. That's the number 4 Record Breakers. RecordBreakersPodcast.com is the website. Rebelly.net for this and other shows. Rebelly TV on YouTube and Twitch. Give us a follow on Twitch. See when we go live. We record now live. You can watch not only the recording of the show, but you can watch pre-show of the show, where we sit around and talk about music.
Stuff.
Jazz theory.
Jazz theory and...
Pierre Luigi Martini.
And popcorn and random foods. And mustard.
Mustard. Ooh. Powdered.
Mustard.
Powdered.
Powdered mustard.
Mustard.
All your hot and chili music paste. Theory and mustard discussions can be found when you watch us live and join in the chat and hang out with us. Do all of those things. Find us everywhere you find podcasts. Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, SoundCloud, all the other places. Like, share, subscribe, hit the bell, slap the walrus, spank the monkey.
Fork the falcon.
Do all the things. Until next time, hasta los huevos.
Toodaloo.
Hashtag find Luke.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.